Welcome to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we take an audio tour with artist Drew Friedman as he discusses his amazing career in satire and describes the subjects of his latest book from Fantagraphics, Old Jewish Comedians. Word Balloon is brought to you by MailOrderComics.com. Today's comics at yesterday's prices. They've got all new 75% discounts on your pre-ordered new releases and more 50% discounts than ever before. That coupled with their unmatched ordering system and the best customer service to be found yet, they're going to make you glad you made the switch to Mail Order Comics for all your comic book collecting needs. Mail Order Comics wants to be your subscription service for all your comic book and related items. Every month you'll enjoy standard discounts of 38% on large press and up to 38% on all small press publishers. They've doubled the specials with discounts of 50% or more. That's right, twice as many DC, Image, and Marvel monthly specials. This month's specials include Marvel's Civil War trades for Iron Man and the Marvel Universe, both just $7.19. Or buy an issue of Image Comics' Fear Agent, The Last Goodbye, for just 74 cents. For all the details, go to MailOrderComics.com. Drew Friedman's photorealistic style has been seen in such diverse magazines as Art Spiegelman's Raw and Mad Magazine, The New Yorker, Entertainment Weekly, and High Times. He and his brother Josh created many parodies of the black and white celebrity images he saw on the Million Dollar Movie and Chiller Theater TV shows of the 1960s. Old Jewish Comedians is the first new collection of Drew's art in almost 10 years. Where did your style come from?
It sort of evolved, I guess, naturally, but I always drew, no pun intended, but when I was younger, I used to draw similar to Basil Wolverton, and I was heavily influenced by Mad Magazine and a lot of those guys. So I used to draw, like, insane faces in a Basil Wolverton style, just exaggerated. I used to draw my teachers, you know. I got in trouble when I was a kid, or even into high school, drawing my teachers on desks and stuff. But I used to draw really fast, and I wanted to slow down a little bit, so I just sort of naturally started doing that stipple style, and it really slowed me down. It made me concentrate a lot more on drawing rather than just turning things out real quickly. I wanted to just slow down, and I wasn't really a fan of the stipple style. I can't name any artists that I admire who did that, but it just sort of suited what I wanted to do, and also I wanted those early strips to look kind of photographic, like as if they were really happening or it could have happened. You know, I wanted to give them that documentary style.
Were magazines like Look and Life then obviously inspirational as well in terms of photographs?
Yeah, sure. You know, I grew up with, my parents subscribed to lots and lots of magazines, so we'd look at stuff every week. Plus, my father worked in the magazine business, so he would bring home lots of magazines as well as Marvel Comics because he worked at the company called Magazine Management, which is the company that owned Marvel Comics. So the guy who was in the next office from him was Stan Lee.
Oh, wow.
He'd bring us home piles of Marvel Comics every week, and as well as Mad Magazine, the famous monsters. So that stuff was just always around.
How many of the old Mad Magazine guys were you able to get to know?
I've gotten to know a few of them recently because I've been contributing to Mad for the last 15 years, which means I've been an official idiot for the last 15 years. But I've gotten to know a few of them, and they're all, you know, all the old-timers are great guys. Al Jaffe and Mort Drucker I've met, Sergio Argonis, and most of them that are still around I've either met or talked to. I talked to Don Martin once. I never met him. He died a few years ago. But
yeah.
But I, you know, Mad has a Christmas party every year, so I've gone to a few of those, and I've gotten to meet some of those guys there. And they're all sweet, you know, great guys.
It's great because a lot of your subjects really, you know, it speaks to a specific era that I think, you know, the boomers can certainly appreciate as kids. And, you know, you're one of us. You're one of those guys, obviously, just watching the parade of celebrity. Where did the twist come from? I mean, was it just, you know, you and Josh kind of, like, going in a weird direction, or was it just, I don't know if you can even maybe articulate where...
I guess that's what it would be, going in a weird direction, but, you know, we weren't into paying tribute to these guys, really, and also we were more interested in the obscure people that, you know, most people didn't pay much attention to or forgotten Hollywood types or TV types, so to do tributes or to do life stories on Joe Franklin or some of the, like, lesser celebrities like Wayne Newton and Joey Heatherton was just our particular take on celebrities and, you know, the world of celebrity. And I would never have been interested in doing, like, tributes to, you know, big famous movie stars or anything. We were always more, you know, we were doing the comics, more interested in the more obscure and, you know, the forgotten. And at the time, we were not really aiming the stuff towards large audiences. Some of the stuff was appearing in National Lampoon, but a lot of it was just appearing in publications with less circulation, like Robert Crumb's magazine Weirdo and Art Spiegelman's Raw and things like that. So we were aiming the stuff towards just amusing our friends at the beginning anyway, just like amusing our friends with these comics and not really thinking about like large audiences. You know, it wasn't really till the first anthology was published in 86 that the stuff like reached a larger audience anyway, I think. And then with Heavy Metal and Lampoon also.
Did you just submit things to Crumb and Spiegelman for their magazines? Or?
Spiegelman was a teacher at School of Visual Arts in the early 80s. He was an instructor there. So I was in his class along with some other cartoonists. We're in the first issue of Raw. When Spiegelman started Raw, he invited a couple of his students to do work for it, and I was one of them, and also a guy named Kaz and Mark Newgarden, some other cartoonists who are still around today and doing interesting work. So that was like fortunate because he was just starting it then, and then out of the blue, I just sent stuff to Robert Crumb when he started his magazine, and I had no idea whether he was going to like my stuff or not. And he sent me back a letter. He didn't want to run the piece I sent, but he said he'd been following my stuff and really enjoyed it, and then he invited me to contribute something to Weirdo, so I did, and then I wound up doing a lot of stuff for him.
Do you remember some of those early Raw pieces? What the first piece was,
the
maybe?
The first piece in Raw was the Andy Griffith Show, parody of the Andy Griffith TV show. And it was about a black man coming to Mayberry, you know, just driving through Mayberry and what happened. So that was, I actually didn't do it for Raw. It was done before Raw. It was done, originally appeared in Harvey Kurtzman's school publication. Harvey Kurtzman was also an instructor at School of Visual Arts at that time, and so was Will Eisner. So that was done for Harvey Kurtzman's publication, and then it wound up in Art Spiegelman's Raw. Spiegelman saw it and liked it and ran it in the first issue of Raw. So that was the first thing in there.
Well, I'm wondering if I either saw it in then your first collection, or
yeah,
if
it's in there as well. It's in the first collection.
Okay, because I was going to say either that, or I didn't know if it was also in Lampoon ever.
I don't think it was in Lampoon. It was actually in High Times magazine in the early 80s, and then it was in the first book collection. Any similarity to Persons Living or Dead is purely coincidental. It's the book that had Shemp on the cover.
Yes, and you know, and I want to get into old Jewish comedians because, like Shemp, I know Tor Johnson is one of your guys, and certainly I think if there's a poster child among your subjects, it might be Tor Johnson. But I've always loved your Shemp Howard in particular because just the. And the great thing about your art in general, you really get into the craters that these poor guys had on their faces.
Yeah, well, yeah. not drawing that stuff to make fun of them in any way, but just trying to make them look, you know, present them as they looked.
Sure.
You know, in all their glory. And, you know, Shemp was, you know, he wasn't, he had no problem with the way he looked. In fact, he used to advertise himself as the ugliest man in Hollywood, and he was, like, proud of that fact. And he had a good sense of humor. And Tor Johnson to me seemed just like a natural to be turned into a comic strip character because he was another guy in the tradition of Don D and Daddy Warbucks because he had white eyes. You know, when he was in movies, usually they give him white eyeballs. So I just thought he was part of that tradition. So, and yeah, he was another guy I grew up loving, seeing him in movies and on Chiller Theater in New York and
sure. Things
like that. So the first piece I did with him was just him at home in the late 60s or when he was sort of out of work and like just what his day would be. I think that was the first thing I did for Robert Crumb's magazine.
Oh, wow.
And when Crumb accepted it, he said, I love it, but I never heard of this guy, Tor Johnson. So I had to sort of fill him in on it. You know, like, well, he was a wrestler who became a movie actor. You know, and then he actually wound up selling Christmas trees in the late 60s.
Oh, my God. Wow. Yeah, and that's the other thing, really. Not a lot of happy endings in a lot of your guys' subjects.
I guess not, but, you know, a lot of these guys, like, you know, they were in movies and they had careers in show business, but, you know, it didn't all wind up so great, which is in the Jewish Comedian book, which is the current book, some of the drawings sort of present little stories. There's no text in the book aside from their real name, their real Jewish name, and then their show business name. So it's Jerome Levitch becomes Jerry Lewis, like that. But some of the drawings are little stories, like the Jack Benny. I show him like at the height of his at the height of his fame. He's an old man, but he's sitting in his Beverly Hills mansion just looking so content, like he's done it all. And then I have a guy named Mousy Garner, who's wrapped up in an electric blanket, looking at the reader like, what happened? I've been in show business for, 80, 90 years, and this is where I wind up. So it's kind of poignant, I guess, but, it's like sort of the extreme, showing. Those are the two extreme ones in the book, the Jack Benny and the Mousy Garner.
Yeah, and Mousy is a guy that I had heard about because for a while there was a talk that he kind of injected himself into the Three Stooges story, that maybe he was going to be a guy that would replace Joe DiRita.
Well, that was always his career, even from the 30s. He was going to be one of the Three Stooges, but he never actually became a Stooge. He sort of became a sort of pseudo-Stooge. When the Three Stooges left Ted Healy in the early 30s to go to Columbia Pictures to do their own shorts, Ted Healy he was their straight man, so he needed some new Stooges to smack around. So he hired these three guys. Mousy Garner was one of them, and they were in movies with him a little bit. But then later on, when Joe Besser left the Three Stooges when Shemp died, like they considered hiring Mousy, but he just never. He never got the gig.
Yeah.
He did wind up in the Spike Jones band for a while, although he couldn't play an instrument, which is weird. But he had a funny face, so that was good enough. And he only died recently, just a couple of years ago, I think. And I think he lived into his 90s, and sort of like one of these guys, he was just always around. Like everybody I know and the friends I have in Hollywood have all encountered Mousy Garner, one place or another. So, but this is that's my little tribute to Mousy.
Did you meet any of these guys?
Actually, when this book came out, the weird thing that happened, which I wasn't anticipating, was a lot of the comedians in the book, the living ones, most of them are deceased, but the living ones have embraced the book, including a guy named Mickey Freeman, who was a regular on the Bilko show, Phil Silver show, and Freddie Roman and Jerry Lewis. They all called and told me how much they love the book. And then the Friars threw a book party for it.
That's cool.
In November, hosted by Freddie Roman and Mickey Freeman. And that was great. It's surreal in a way, but it was great. And it was very gratifying to know that these guys, embraced the book. And some of the other comedians, Jack Carter is in the book. And he's he's always been a curmudgeon. That's part of his shtick.
I didn't know he was still alive.
He's still alive. He's probably in his 80s. He lives in Los Angeles. But the Los Angeles Times did a piece about the book, so they contacted some of the comics, and they talked to Jerry Lewis and Mickey Freeman and Freddie, and he also talked to Jack Carter, who said he was not so thrilled to be in the book because it didn't look like him, according to him. It's like I made him look. He said, "What are those freckles on my head? And the hair is all wrong, and that stupid grin he gave me." But then he praised the other drawings. He said, "I nailed Buddy Hackett and Milton Berle and all that." So Jack Carter wasn't so thrilled, but that's what I would have expected anyway.
No, that was a great Vegas looking Hackett. It's really cool.
And thank you.
And you mentioned the Friars Club. Is it me, and maybe because of our generation, but you see the roast today on Comedy Central, and it's such a pale comparison to the sneaked out tapes that we got of the old roasts and things like that still exist. And it seemed, and I don't know, you tell me, you've been there. Does it still, seem like the Friars Club when you're up close, or is something missing now that the generations have passed? And
the Friars Club itself is a men's club, or like it's open to women now too. But it's a beautiful building in Manhattan. So this party they gave was called a book warming.
Okay.
They do it for when members have books come out, they throw these book warmings. But I'm not a member of the Friars, but they put this party together anyway. I did go to the Jerry Lewis roast last year, and there's so many people go to these things that they have to they don't even have them at the Friars Club anymore. They had this at the New York Hilton.
Sure.
So there were probably a couple of thousand people there, and then the dais itself there were over 100 people. It was like a football field.
Sure.
And Jerry, and unfortunately Jerry wasn't in good shape that day. He was like very sick, and he looked sick, and then he actually had a stroke right after the roast, and he went home, and he shouldn't have done it, but the roast itself was incredible because there were old timers like roasting him, and then some of the new new comics who I think are very funny, like Jeffrey Ross and Lisa Lampanelli and Gilbert Gottfried, who was just outrageous. like that. But I can't really compare it to the old days because I never really attended any of the old ones. I've heard some of the clips, and I've heard about, you know, some of the legendary things that happened at some of the old roasts in the old days. But I enjoy some of the roasts, and I've seen a few of them. I'd love to see the Chevy Chase one because I heard that was like over the top. I don't know if there's a tape that exists of it, but they really tore into him.
Yeah, there really wasn't many friendly.
I think he was shell shocked at the end. That's what I heard. Anyway, he was like he didn't expect what they did to him.
Absolutely. A couple of the comics, because as you say, there are some very obscure ones in there, and I thought I knew my old Borscht Belt comics.
Well, I know who you're going to say, because everybody says, who is Menashe Skolnick?
Thank you.
I have to admit, I had never heard of him either when I started the book, but I found a photo of him in a old player's guide, which is a book that lists like old actors, and I have one from the late 50s, and sure enough, his face was in there with a few of his credits, so I Googled him and got information, and then I asked around about him, and it turns out he was a legendary Yiddish comedian on stage in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. He wound up doing television, some television, on Ed Sullivan and stuff, and then he was actually starred in a couple of Broadway shows even into the late 60s, and I think he died around 1970, but I love putting him in there because he was the one guy who didn't change his name. Because I have, you know, like I said, the real name and the show business name.
Sure.
So, show business name. So I have Menashe Skolnick, and then Menashe Skolnick is the show business name. So that was like a little, like, just I thought that was funny. But he's the one guy nobody under 50 has ever heard of him. But every time any old timer says, "Oh, of course, Menashe Skolnick, he was hilarious." And my aunt was like a big Menashe Skolnick fan, and my father knew all about him and stuff. So, you know, who knew? But he's the one guy, like, nobody has any clue. So, you know. And a couple other guys, too, but Menashe Skolnick is the most obscure, I think.
Is Lou Jacoby in the book?
No, because some of these guys, I think of him more as an actor. There's
okay.
Two actors in the book, like Al Lewis is an actor, but always comics. Lou Jacoby was, like, the dramatic work. It's possible. I'm doing a sequel. The sequel will be out next week. More old Jewish comedians.
Oh, that's great.
And the difference is going to be there's going to be some women this time. Because a couple of people say, how come there's no women in this? So, well, there weren't that many stand-up comics. Like Phyllis Diller was sort of the first. You know, there were a lot of, like, Molly Picon and Gertrude Berg and Fanny Bryce. You know,
sure.
There were a lot of Jewish female comic actresses. But there weren't that many official comics. Phyllis Diller was, and she was Jewish. And don't get the. I'm not really into the Jewish thing. I just like thought about what book I want to do, and I thought I want to draw old comedians. But you know, so many of them are Jewish.
Absolutely.
You know, I could think of a few that weren't. You know, some great ones like Bob Hope and Jackie Gleason, W.C. Fields and Buster Keaton. There's like a list, but so many of them, you know, when I go down a list, so many of my favorites growing up happen to be Jewish. So these are, like, comedians who happen to be Jewish. There's like, a lot of them didn't, like, play up their Jewishness.
Right.
And even Jack Carter, when the reporter from the Los Angeles Times called him and mentioned what the book was called, Jack Carter goes, first of all, I don't like the word old, and I don't like the word Jewish. I never worked Jewish. So.
I didn't know Bud Abbott was Jewish.
A few people have said that. His mother was Jewish. His father wasn't. But he converted to Judaism. Well, he was Jewish, but his wife actually wasn't Jewish. And they had a ceremony in the late 40s where she converted to Judaism.
And I always felt bad for him because he, at the end was doing the Abbott and Costello cartoon, I know, when I was a little kid.
Yeah, well, he was doing the voice for that.
Yeah.
There's a guy named Candy Candido doing the voice of Lou Costello. And it was like, you know, I loved seeing him when I was a kid, but, like, in retrospect, most of them were like, look, there's a monster from outer space. You got to go fight it. It was, like, basically the same plot over and over.
Yeah, pretty much just taken from the comic book or vice versa.
Yeah, yeah, it was kind of pathetic, but, it, you know, kept him a little busy towards the end of his life.
Sure. And Benny, I'm really glad Benny Rubin is in the book because I've always been a fan of Benny Rubin's. I always think he, like, you know, made his presence known in those, like, little 2-minute moments in The Stooges or a That Girl episode or wherever the hell the guy was.
Yep, yep. There's a few guys like that. Like, going in the next book, a guy named Herbie Fay, who was like a face that everybody knows. Most people don't know his name. He was also a regular on Bilko, but He was a bald guy. He was on Bilko, but he looked like he was in his 60s, even though he was, you know, in the platoon and everything. But he always was the guy who played like the Jewish waiter or the tailor. It's like you'll know his face when you see him.
Okay.
There's a few guys like that, but I didn't want to leave Benny Rubin out of the first book. There are a couple of guys I just thought had to be in. You know, when you think of Jewish comedians, like Kenny Youngman has to be there.
Sure.
And Milton Berle, who I did on the cover.
Yes, wonderful.
And Benny Rubin, and a few more obscure ones, and of course, Jerry Lewis. But there's a long list of people I can choose from for the second book, like, that weren't included in the first, including Eddie Cantor and Jan Murray, who I wanted to include, but I didn't have any good reference for him at the time. And he's since died, but he'll be in the second book.
That's cool.
And Zero Mostel, and, you know, and then again, like I said, some women, like, Molly Picon, definitely, and Phyllis Diller, and also a woman named, actually, I forget her name now. She's so unknown. Bobby Baker, who was the queen of the cruise ship.
Okay.
She was a Catskill comedian for years and years, and then she became the queen of the cruise ships. So she'll be in the book.
Did your family go to any of the old Catskill resorts and everything back
then?
No,
we didn't really do that. I went when I was a teenager to Kutcher's Country Club, which is the last one that's actually still there, and where they still have shows and stuff. But no, we didn't really do that. We didn't do much of that.
And are you and Josh going to do anything together?
It seems unlikely. He does his own thing. He's a musician, and he has his own book projects. And, you know, mm-hmm. we sort of like... I think we did what we wanted to do together, and then we sort of like went off in different directions.
That's cool. Do you see yourself pairing up with another writer to do more sequential stuff? I like the portraits, and the portraits, as you say, do tell a lot, because there really is a story in each of these. As in Mousie Gardner's, I think a great example.
Yeah.
But and it's funny because I guess Leonard Maltin does the foreword, but beyond that, there really are no other words other than, as you say, everyone's names.
Well, I actually thought about including some text and some history of each person, but I just didn't want this to be a history book, because those already exist. There's already books about Jewish comedians. You can get a lot of information on the web. I wanted this to be something, you know, where the story is in the faces, you know. So I debated whether there should be some text, but then I just decided no, I don't want to, you know. I thought it would cheapen the work a little to have, and also I'm not, you know, I have to admit, I'm not a fan of some of these guys in the book. I'm not even a fan of their work necessarily, but, you know, they all have the same thing in common, which is they have these great faces, and they all, like, even when they were old, still wanted to be funny and have, you know, the spot. I mean, they just, I have them, like, it's a sort of in-your-face effect, hopefully, where they're, you know, the faces are like, looking right at you, and
absolutely.
They just, like, are still begging, you know, begging for you to laugh at them, you know, even though they're old and their days are numbered, they still want to, you know, they still want to be in the spotlight. They don't want to give up. So that's hopefully the effect. But as far as comics, this next anthology that's coming out in a couple of months, The Fun Never Stops, will have a lot of, it's about half comics. It's like comics that I've done since the last book of comics called Warts and All that came out in 91. So this is like all the comics I've done since that, either with collaborators or by myself, or my main writing partner is my wife Kathy, and we like work out ideas and situations together and dialogue. So but all that work will be in this next book, including a piece that just ran a few weeks ago, which I think you can see on the web, called Guilty Pleasures of Literary Greats, which is about like famous writers and their like guilty pleasures. So I'll just mention the first panel is William Faulkner. The text says, in the early 60s, William Faulkner would without fail excuse himself from his dinner guests to enjoy his favorite TV sitcom, Car 54, Where Are You? A friend of mine had just read a Faulkner biography, which was about 800 pages. So like on page 700-something, he said like the book was like, you know, oppressively plotting and boring, but all of a sudden on page 700-something there's a thing basically describing that, where how Faulkner would excuse himself on Saturday night, that wherever he was, to watch Car 54, Where Are You? So that's the first panel of this strip, William Faulkner watching Joey Roth, you know, do the ooh-ooh, and Faulkner just, like, you know, laughing. So
yeah.
That's the first piece. But that'll be in this next book. That was the last comic I did.
Yeah, the J.D. Salinger, Elaine Joyce connection really, that was something I hadn't heard before.
Yeah, I'd heard that one for years, but then, of course, since I did this, other people were saying, well, what about Salinger being obsessed with the actress Catherine Oxenberg from Dynasty? And Peter Bagg actually emailed me and said, well, I had already heard this, but he mentioned, and they printed his letter in the New York Observer, that Salinger actually flew out to Hollywood to get onto the set of Dynasty to meet Catherine Oxenberg. He was so obsessed with her. And she didn't know who he was and had him escorted off the set. You know, she was, like, creeped out by the old man. And then the last one that, you know, really does tie into comics was Vladimir Nabokov was obsessed with Dennis the Menace, because he thought that always wondered why Dennis didn't look like either one of his parents, so he must be illegitimate. Or he looked like his mother, but he didn't look like his father, so he must have been illegitimate. You know?
Mr. Wilson, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And it's funny, I just got an evening with Groucho, and didn't know about the T.S. Eliot-Groucho connection until hearing that. And then I saw your strip, and I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Well, I always heard they were pen pals, and then they finally met, and then somebody just told me, you know, who's just, like, you know, obsessed with this kind of stuff. Yeah, like, Groucho just wanted to, like, talk about King Lear. T.S. Eliot was a huge Marx Brothers fan. He wanted to meet Groucho Marx and, you know, I suppose talk about the Marx Brothers or, you know, just be amused by Groucho. And Groucho wanted to just discuss King Lear, so I have T.S. Eliot sort of dozing off as Groucho's like, you know.
In the first part of the
yeah
of the story.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I thought that was a little amusing moment.
May I ask quickly about Joe Franklin, the amazing Shrinking Joe Franklin? That was always one of my favorites, along with the Andy of Mayberry sequence you guys did. It's, you know, are there? It seems to me that, and as you said, in terms of guys like Jack Carter not being happy with old Jewish comedians, are there Tor Johnsons today in today's world of celebrity that, like, interest you in that same way?
I kind of doubt it. You know, maybe I could think of a few, but no, I don't think it's, you know, it's like I grew up with Tor Johnson and a lot of the guys that we did in the early strips, so sort of like been there and done it, and the newer work is not really doesn't really go in that direction. Maybe the Jewish comedian book fits into that category, where it's like, you know, reviving some of these guys who either people never heard of before or, you know, or maybe heard of when they were kids or years ago but haven't thought of for a long time. So
it almost seems like the hype machine of today's celebrity really, you know, doesn't allow for obscurity. I mean, look, like, you know, that guy William Hung from American Idol is, I think, a fair Tor Johnson kind of comparison, and it's like too late. I mean, my God, the guy's on Extra every other week. And
yeah, I guess so. I don't really, you know, follow it too much, like what's going on. You know, I do a lot of illustration for magazines, and sometimes I'm asked to draw current celebrities, and it's usually best for me not to even know who they are, or else, you know, I would turn the assignment down. So many, unfortunately, I was at, when I used to do a lot of work for Entertainment Weekly, and they would always inevitably ask me to draw the Friends, the cast of the Friends, you know.
Okay.
I never saw the show. To this day, I still haven't seen it. And I purposely didn't watch it, because I know if I ever watched it once, I would say, you know, no, I can't do that assignment, because I know I would hate it. So I've drawn the Friends many times. I even know their names. Like, you know, the characters' names, but I've never seen the show, and hopefully I never will.
What makes you laugh these days? I mean, are there new comedians out there and things that are...
Or
writers and, you know...
I guess, you know, just what everybody else enjoys. I thought Borat was great. I loved that. And Little Miss Sunshine, you know, nothing
sure.
that obscure. You know, what just about what everybody else likes. You know, I'm not that picky. I thought, yeah, I did. I loved Borat. I didn't know if I would or not, because it was so, like, you know, people were raving about it so much. I was sort of resistant to it, but I did. I loved it.
The sequel to Old Jewish Comedians is coming out in a couple months.
That'll be out about a year from now. Actually,
oh, okay.
I'm still working on that. It'll be out early next year from Fantagraphics, with an introduction by Larry Gelbart, who was a writer who worked with a lot of the people who were in the first book and who are going to be in the second book, and he also. he worked with them, and he also knew a lot of the people. Like, he was a writer on the Sid Caesar show, mm-hmm. and he was a writer for Bob Hope for years and for Jackie Gleason, and then he worked with Zero Mostello on Broadway. Zero Mostello will be in the book.
Cool.
And Jack Ilford, and he worked with Woody Allen. So he's writing the forward to the sequel. And then the book that's coming out in a couple of months, The Fun Never Stops, which is an anthology, also from Fantagraphics, and Dan Close did the introduction to that. And it also is going to have a piece that ran in Comic Art magazine, the last issue, which is sort of about my work, like the first 25 years of my work, where I've been and what I'm doing now and stuff. So, and it'll have a lot of photographs and stuff.
That's great. You know, when that comes out, I'd love to speak to you again if we could.
That'd be great. And I'm actually going to go to comic conventions to promote the book. So.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I hope you come to Chicago. I'm hoping to be in San Diego and New York for the next couple. I wasn't at this past New York convention, but.
I heard it's such a crush of humanity at that New York one. I talked to a few people who were there, and I was invited to go, and I declined because Topps Bubblegum has a booth. I'm doing work for Topps right now, a new series they're doing. But they wanted me to come and help, promote it or whatever.
Sure.
But I had heard that, like, last year they were turning people away. It was so crowded.
I was there last year, yes.
Yeah, so I didn't go this year, but, I'm going to, when this book, next book comes out, I'm going to go to some of those conventions. I'd love to go to Chicago because I keep hearing this store called Quimby's is incredible.
You'd love Quimby's, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah,
there's several stores like that would carry your stuff. And
yeah, I talked to Monty Beauchamp, who edited the Jewish Comedian books, edits Blab magazine. He lives in Chicago, and he's always, saying I would love Quimby's. I know I would.
That's cool. Can you tell us quickly about the Topps project, or you want to wait until it's?
I think I should wait. I'm not sure they want to. It involves. Maybe I should hold off for
okay.
now. I'm not sure they really wanted to get out quite yet.
Drew Friedman, thank you very much for your time. I'm a longtime fan, and really, you draw very funny stuff.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate it.
The people who know your subjects know that you capture them and always give them a great spin. So thank you, and looking forward to talking to you again.
Thanks so much.
A nice talk with Drew Friedman. Make sure you look for other Friedman books like Warts and All, Private Lives of Public Figures, and the soon-to-be-released The Fun Never Stops, all from Fantagraphic Books. Word Balloon is brought to you by MailOrderComics.com. Today's comics at yesterday's prices. They've got all new 75% discounts on your pre-ordered new releases and more 50% discounts than ever before. That coupled with their unmatched ordering system and the best customer service to be found yet, they're going to make you glad you made the switch to Mail Order Comics for all your comic book collecting needs. Mail Order Comics wants to be your subscription service for all your comic book and related items. Every month you'll enjoy standard discounts of 38% on large press and up to 38% on all small press publishers. They've doubled the specials with discounts of 50% or more. That's right, twice as many DC, Image, and Marvel monthly specials. This month's specials include Marvel's Civil War trades for Iron Man and the Marvel Universe, both just $7.19. Or buy an issue of Image Comics Fear Agent, The Last Goodbye, for just 74 cents. For all the details, go to MailOrderComics.com. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget to subscribe to Word Balloon via iTunes, Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, or any of the podcatching sites. If you enjoy the show, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd write a review for us at iTunes or dig us at digg.com. Email your questions about Word Balloon to john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007.